study shows an MRI brain scan can detect a person's altruism. Tests have successfully demonstrated a specific area of the brain predicts a person's altruistic behavior. 19 newspapers in Belgium have accused Yahoo of violating copyright laws and have demanded Yahoo remove links to their archived stories. Google has already done so following a legal challenge from the same group. American human rights groups are cooperating with some of the largest internet companies, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Vodafone, to develop a program to guarantee civil liberties for online customers. Chipmaker Intel and software maker Sun Microsystems are expected to announce a partnership today. Sun will use Intel chips in some of its servers, and Intel will endorse Sun's Microsoft operating system Solaris. Eaton today posted a 14.8% increase in quarterly profit. The diversified manufacturer cited good sales in its fluid power and electrical units. In Libya, the government plans a massive layoff of more than a third of its workforce, 400,000 people. The move is expected to save Libya more than $3 billion annually. Light sweet crude is trading at $52.99 a barrel. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 92 points, the Nasdaq down 27. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is the Week in Review. All topics are valid, and we've got a lot to talk about. There is the opening gambit in the 2008 presidential race. I know it seems awfully early, but Democrats and Republicans are jumping in the ring, everyone from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama to John Kerry and John Edwards seem to want to make another go of it. Some are rooting for dark horse Al Gore, while others are looking at people like the first Latino to run, the New Mexico governor, Bill Richardson. On the Republican side, of course, there's the standard warhorse McCain, who seems to be losing a lot of energy, given how much he's supporting the Bush escalation in Iraq, along with Giuliani, Brownback, Romney, Huckabee, and others. We'll talk about that, as well as the first 100 hours in the House. It seems the Democrats have kept their pledge, passed all six bills they said they would pass. We'll talk about those bills and their prospect in the Senate, as well as the joy of watching Bush's State of the Union address tomorrow. Joy, well, maybe that's the wrong word, but given that only 24% of Americans support his policy in Iraq, it'll be a joy just watching Nancy Pelosi's face as she sits behind him, the first woman ever to be one of those three, the President, the Vice President, the Speaker of the House, that shows up in a State of the Union address. I'm sure she'll clap respectfully at times, but I'll be watching her face to see how she responds to things. Nonetheless, I think she's doing a very good job. We'll talk about that, too, how she's organizing committees. One of the things she's doing, actually, is taking the oil company stuff a little bit away from John Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, which I think is good since he's an old warhorse of the energy industry. That'll be fun to talk about. And discussing all these issues and any issue that you want to join me on is my guest, who I'm sure most of you know well. His name is Joe Vecchio. He is the host of Cup of Joe, which leads right into the Inside Scoop. Never been on my show before, but I'm always glad to have him. Joe, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Mark. It's an honor.
Well, let's start with 2008, Joe. I'm certainly too early for me to make an endorsement, but I want to know what your thoughts are on what looks to be like the great Clinton-Obama matchup, though there are certainly other Democrats in the ring. What are your views?
Well, you know, I live here in Illinois, so the news is all full of Mr. Obama, and you can already see that the right wing is just trying to smear him left and right, using his middle name, Hussein, against him and confusing him, of course, with Osama.
So, right.
I happen to like Mr. Obama a lot, and like you, it's really kind of early for me to make a decision. I like all of the candidates that we have for the most part. I like Mr. Obama. I like Senator Clinton. I like Mr. Richardson. I even like Dennis Kucinich, even though I like what he believes in, but I don't think he's presidential timber, if You know?
No, he doesn't have a chance. Yeah. I mean, it's always nice to have him in the race to hear the issues that, that you know he has addressed.
Okay.
But I think we can agree he's not a first tier candidate.
Right. I think again, it's not anything against him personally or anything against his beliefs, because obviously if you listen to what he says, I agree with almost everything he says. But for a presidential candidate, it's not just a question of whether you agree with them; it's a question of whether you think they can put these policies into practice. In 2004, I supported Governor Dean primarily because he was the governor and had to deal with the same kind of issues that the president has to deal with.
Well, it's interesting to me how the Iraq War is really affecting this entire thing. I always thought John McCain was the most formidable Republican candidate, precisely because though he is a Republican, he was always distancing himself from the Bush administration. And whereas I often disagree with John McCain where he distanced himself from George Bush, I usually agreed with him. Well, now that he is going full force for the escalation, it's interesting that he seems to be driving himself in a corner that I would think would really hurt his political bid. You agree?
Well, yeah, I think there's a general problem with Republicans to begin with, because in order for them to win their primaries, they have to appeal to the craziest of crazies in the Republican Party, who are the ones that run the show there. And McCain, he always talks about, distancing himself from the president, but when it comes to actual votes or actual, actions, he never seems to do that. He'll talk a big game, but when push comes to shove, he always backs down. And he's been Mr. Bush's boy all along, pretty much.
I think that is the case. One of the things that interests me about Barack Obama is I co-host a show on XM Satellite Radio on The Power, which is the African American network. And some people would think that African Americans would be very excited by the first realistic African American candidate to run for president. I mean, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton were running to make a point, but no one thought they had a chance to win.
Right.
Whereas Barack Obama does seem to have a chance to win, but it may surprise you, Joe. I don't know if it does. But the listeners on that network, it was a close race, but at least from the number of calls we received, and we received a lot of calls, they slightly preferred Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama. Does that surprise you?
A little, yes. Maybe it's because of some inexperience. And Senator Clinton has done a lot, as far as I know, for the African-American community. And she's
I'll tell you the reason they gave. They said that, I mean, obviously all of her love was based on Bill Clinton. I mean, it wasn't about her particularly. Not that, she's that different from him. I mean, I think we all believe that her policies would be similar to his. But their view was Bill Clinton was the first black president, and that's only said half tongue-in-cheek. I mean, in many ways, they really believe it, that he was the kind of president who really looked out for African-Americans, and they feel like she would do the same. And it's interesting, they fear that Barack Obama, who's working so hard to appeal to middle America, to majority America, to white America, will sort of run away from his black roots a bit. And I'm curious, since you're in Chicago, if you would agree with that assessment. You know him better than I do.
Well, I've only been here since August or so I'm not really an expert on Chicago or Illinois attitudes. But I agree with your impression that, or with their impression, that he's probably trying to run too much towards the middle. And, he talks about trying to reach out to the red state people. And you know what? There are a lot of people out there in the red states who would never listen to the man, A, because he's black, B, because he's not from there. You know what I'm saying? Because they're very xenophobic down in the South. So I think you can certainly make a point to say, well, we'll talk to anybody. You have to realize there's some people that you simply can't talk to down there. And I don't think Obama understands that. And maybe after he's been hit with a few more of these, you're nothing but a terrorist because your father was a Muslim. Hello?
I was one of the many, I should say, to be very impressed by him when he gave his speech at the Democratic National Convention.
And
he gave
it was
one of the best speeches I've heard in my life. It was powerful. It was articulate. It was emotional. I mean, it sort of tugged at your heartstrings, but didn't leave your mind at the door. It was an incredibly crafted speech, a lot of charisma. And definitely the kind that was it sort of roused you up, but it didn't necessarily make moderates angry either. But my question is, and I think it's a question a lot of people around the country, since he's only been in the Senate 2 years, is where did he come from? He was an Illinois state legislator for a number of years. What is his background? Apart from, we know, okay, his father's from Kenya and his mother's from Kansas. But I mean, in terms of political background, where does this guy come from?
Well, again, I've only just moved here, so I'm not extremely familiar with the politics of the region just yet. So
okay.
I really couldn't answer that. Maybe my roommate Tommy, who's a native Chicagoan, would know more than I would. He's not here right now.
Okay. Well, we're going to explore that question. Obviously, we have 2 years. We don't have to decide it right away. I personally am excited about all of them. I mean, I would be very happy with the President Obama. I'd be happy with another President Clinton. Frankly, I'd be happy with President Gore. I after he won the election in 2000, I was very excited that thinking he was going to be my president, never realizing that the United States Supreme Court would overturn a Democratic election. But personally, I'm less excited about Kerry. I have to admit, even in 2004, I didn't support him in the primaries, and I voted for him in the general, but he wasn't my first choice. And I think a lot of Democrats agree with me, sort of, that he's had his chance and it's time for him to move on. But I want to hear Joe's thought on that, and I want to hear your thought on that at 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Give us a call and let us know on this issue or any other issue of the week. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Head on Radio with Bob Kincaid.
Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number one? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know
what you want? Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Lots to talk about. We got the State of the Union address coming up tomorrow. If you're listening tonight, I've got a terrific show between veterans talking about the Iraqi war, debating it. One agrees with it, one does not, but the both have spent a lot of time in Iraq, so we'll hear a lot of facts on the ground. I hope you'll be able to hear that tonight at 7 o'clock, or we'll be playing it on the horn tomorrow at 2, so I hope you'll check in for that. And then coming up later on in the week, we're going to talk about the Iraqi oil bill. Do you know about this? This is the law that protects American oil companies. If you ever wanted to know why we're in Iraq, you'll definitely learn something. That's coming up next Sunday, we're going to talk about that. And also Jim Yancey will be on the air next Thursday talking about Katrina. So a lot coming up in the week. Right now, though, there's still many things to mention. The first 100 hours are done. We're very proud of that. All six things the Democrats plan to do were done and on time. Nancy Pelosi runs a tight ship. And, of course, people are already focused on campaign 2008. It's amazing. My guest is Joe Vecchio. He hosts The Cup of Joe, which precedes my show on the Head On Radio Network. And we're talking about campaign 2008. Before the break, I said that I thought that Kerry was probably the least loved of the Democratic contenders. Let me go to Dave in California and see if he agrees.
Hey, yes, I do agree with all of that. I think it was not that long ago that I spoke with your partner today, your newfound partner, Joe. We've only talked a few times, but today was one of those times. How are you doing, Joe?
Hi, Dave. How are you? Nice to talk to you.
Really great. I was listening to a program, Mark, in which the same subject of Clinton and Obama, and if it be the choice, and yes, almost all the black callers said they would not be voting for Obama, and the main reason they gave is that they thought he'd be an ideal candidate for an assassination. So,
that's interesting. Well, you know, I kind of think that Obama's dirty little secret is that he's running for vice president. If you look at him, he has a very similar strategy to John Edwards' strategy 4 years ago. John Edwards, of course, had only spent one term in the Senate. Was sort of a rising star, a young, good-looking guy who spoke well compared to the slow, plodding John Kerry. And I think John Edwards was running and got the vice presidential nomination. I think that in many ways that's what Barack Obama is doing. Some people say, well, could we really have a woman at the top of the ticket and an African-American as a vice presidential candidate on the ticket? And I say, why not? Why not? You know, when Bill Clinton ran with Al Gore in 92, they said, can you have two young men, both Southerners, on the ticket? And they said, why not? I think people need to think outside the paradigm, and I can't think of anything that would electrify this country more. Totally apart from, I really like Hillary Clinton, I really like Barack Obama. They both have imperfections, which we'll definitely discuss. But so what if it's a woman and a black man on the ticket? Heck, we've got 200 years of history with no women and no black people on a major nomination ticket. So, Geraldine Ferraro is the exception. But why not? I don't think there'd be a problem with that. Joe, do you think that could happen, or do you think that's too much of a dream?
I don't think it's too much of a dream, and I think it would be a good ticket. You know, and you were talking about Clinton and Gore being both Southerners, and the reason why that can work is because people in the Northeast and people in the industrial states and industrial cities are much more willing to vote for Southerners than a Southerner is willing to vote for a Northerner. If you had a ticket that was two Northerners, nobody in the South would ever vote for it at all.
True, but as Tom Schaller has pointed out, and as we've seen from the most recent election, we don't need the South. I mean, frankly, the only Southern state that Kerry had a chance at was Florida, which is the least Southern of any of the Southern states.
Well, yes,
you know, at this point, the Republicans are basically the party of the old Confederacy, and we're making tremendous strides out west. The Democrats are holding their convention in Denver for a reason. I think Colorado is very much in play, as is Nevada, as is Arizona and New Mexico. And as we make strides out west, if the South won't follow along, then so be it. I'll tell you this, in Virginia, just across from Washington, D.C., we are seeing a Democratic surge, largely, I admit it, for the parts of Virginia that are not so much the South, part mostly because of the Washington, D.C. suburbs. We saw the tremendous victory of Jim Webb in the Senate. We have a Democratic governor in Virginia. So the border states of the South are ripe for the picking. And if Alabama and Mississippi don't go for the Democrats, well, I think we can do without them.
Well,
Dave, do you have a... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think we can certainly do that. We can concentrate on the western states. And I've lived out west. I've lived in Montana. And there's a hugely different attitude between them and the southerners. I mean, they're both kind of independent-minded, but the westerners are much more rational about...
Well, here's the difference. The westerners are libertarian, whereas the southerners are fundamentalist Christian. I mean, again, I know I'm grossly giving generalizations, and obviously there are many people who don't fit this category. But overall, if you look at the average westerner, they want government out of their business. They want to be able to live their lives with as little regulation as possible, but also with as little government telling them what to do as possible. And there they differ from the Southerners, who want this Christian fundamentalism to really use the government to help convert people.
Right. And the thing about it is, and the reason why the Westerners can be, if libertarian is the right term, is the reason why they can be like that is because so few people live in those states. I mean, you look
right
at Montana, less than a million people live in Montana. Okay, I think we have more people living off of Devon Avenue here in Chicago than live in Montana.
Okay. It's wide open spaces and ranches and things like that. But I'll tell you this, the cities of the West are growing, particularly in the Southwest, particularly in the three states I mentioned, well, four states, Colorado, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico. Nevada, of course, is a one-city state, with Las Vegas really being the only city. And in the cities, people are very strongly Democratic, and I think they're overcoming some of the feeling in the countryside. Of course, even in Montana, you have two Democratic senators. So Montana voted for Clinton one of the two elections.
Right.
So we have lots of strides in the West. Dave, I haven't given you much of a chance to talk yet. Go ahead.
Well, I'd say that you know, both of you and your listeners know, that we're in a totally criminal war. And Hillary's an intelligent woman, and she has to know that, too. And if she's made the decision that for political reasons she will support the war, I find that, frankly, unforgivable.
Well, Dave, let's talk about that, because I think that is a crucial problem for Hillary Clinton. To be clear, she is now changing. Hillary Clinton is now very strongly opposing the surge, opposing the escalation, supporting the Democratic withdrawal plan. And critics would say, with some fairness, that she's someone who follows the people rather than leads the people. I mean, when the people were supporting the war, the majority of Americans, she was there. When now the majority of Americans has turned strongly against the war, she's there. Frankly, it's the same criticism people made about Bill Clinton, that he was a populist president who just did what the American people wanted. I think it's actually a fair criticism. On the other hand, I'm not sure it's a terrible thing to have a president that does what the American people want. You know, usually that's what we like in a democracy. I'll agree with you, though. She was not a leader on this, but today I think it's fair to say she is, you know, as in opposition as much as any other Democrat. Dave, you agree?
Well, I do hope so. I sincerely do. And I hate to ever miss an opportunity to say, yeah, if we're going to have anything like an honest election, the Democrats have to get on the idea of getting rid of those damn machines as soon as possible.
And they're going to do it. They're going to do it. I told you, Dave, it's going to happen. It's already happening across the country. I think that'll be one of the first items of the agenda now that the first 100 hours are gone, and I think it'll happen within 6 months,
and
definitely before the next...
Stop the diversionary tactics on that. None of this paper trail stuff. Paper ballots should be the ones that are officially counted, period. And you want to spend all the money on the machines, you're just making them a very expensive pencil, you know. Put it on paper, count it by hand, keep it in the public eye. That's how I see it.
I agree with that, and the cons aren't going to give these machines up easily. And you know that too, Mark.
Well, Joe, I agree with you too. I mean, my preference would be just counting the paper. But, you know, in our era of everyone wanting everything yesterday, I don't think states are going to give up the machines as a way to quickly count the paper. The most important thing, though, is that the paper be the official paper of record,
right,
so that any candidate who wants to challenge any election can say, count all you want with the machines, but as you say, it's just an expensive calculator. At the end of the day, it's the paper that counts. And that's what, indeed, what Rush Holt's bill does. is, although they use the machines, at the end of the day, it's the paper record that's the official record, and any candidate can insist on going to paper if that candidate wants to.
Oh, thank you both, guys.
Thank you, Dave. Let me go to Sarge on line two. Sarge, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
Listen, you guys were talking, you and Joe were talking about the South and the Democrats not having a chance in the South and stuff. You know, the one thing that I'm seeing, and I know a little bit about the South, is
I'm
that,
sure you do.
That if the Democrats would follow up on this Katrina disaster, they would be surprised at what a hole they would make in the Republican Party here in Mississippi. If you can cover, if John Edwards has taken a giant step by turning up in New Orleans, if he would slip over into Mississippi, he could carry the Gulf Coast, he could carry the Piney Woods. And
you know, that's an interesting point, Sarge. I'll tell you, Mississippi is about, I think, 40% African-American, right?
Right, and there's another group that needs
so basically, Democrats only need about, what, 20-30% of the white vote to carry the state?
Yeah. And that's, see, if you isolate the Delta in Mississippi, you can beat them. That's the only thing that people have in the GOP is that Delta area, because they are your hardcore, don't care about anybody racist trash. And if you will tap into the coastal region, which is your more moderate region, and get up into the Piney Woods, if you can carry from the coast to Jackson, you can win the state, especially if you tap into the black vote.
I want to be clear about something, but that I'm not suggesting that we abandon the South, but I think practically speaking, we need to understand that there are some things that we can get and some things that we can't get immediately. What we have to do is we have to use Katrina. I don't mean use it in a bad way, but I mean we have to show people that we want to help and that we're willing to help, and work on the South to show them that not all Yankees are evil, vicious, you know, Satan-loving people. And slowly but surely, we can turn the thing around over there. But in the immediate future, things look very, very difficult. And until we can get that, we need to concentrate on the areas we can win.
I think Sarge makes an interesting point. I mean, Louisiana already has, of course, Senator Mary Landrieu. It has one Democratic senator. It did vote for Clinton, I believe, both times in 92, 96. And what he says about Mississippi is really interesting. When you think about it, here Mississippi is a rock red Republican state and yet has 40% African Americans who vote 90% for the Democrats. What that means is you've got at least 70, maybe 80% of whites constantly voting for the Republican Party. It shouldn't be that hard. Just to peel away 10% of the white people in Mississippi by letting them recognize how much the government can help them post-Katrina. It's a very interesting idea, and I want to think about it through the break. We've got to take a break, though. So hold off, Sarge. I want to hear more from you, but we got to take a break. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 888-488-MARK. Excuse me, 888-488-MARK, 877-4-HEAD-ON. I think I said that right. Got Joe Vecchio here from Cup of Joe and Sarge from Mississippi. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
Shelley, my latest single is called In My Time. It's all about the pressure to drink and how to handle it. Now, I'm not going to preach, but I've made my choice. I'm waiting till I'm 21, and I encourage you to stay safe and wait until the time is right for you. You can download my song and the video for free at www.inmytime.net. That's www.inmytime.net. Listening. This message was brought to you by the Kansas Department of Transportation. Stay safe.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's a week in review. All topics are valid. I have as my guest the person who leads into my show on Mondays and Fridays, Cup of Joe, Joe Vecchio. Welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Glad to be.
And I also have on the line Sarge from Mississippi. Sarge, I want to know if you read, I've read a very interesting thing by former FEMA director and Arabian horse trader Mike Brown. As incompetent as he is, I did find his statement very interesting. He said, it was just a small print in the Washington Post, that during the Katrina mess, the government put extreme amount of pressure on Kathleen Blanco, the governor of Louisiana, to get her to nationalize the guard, the troops, to let her, let the feds take complete control of relief. But they refused to put any kind of pressure on Haley Barbour, the governor of Mississippi, the Republican, to do the same thing. And what Brown said, it's fascinating to me that he would say this, is that they wanted to put pressure on Blanco so that when the government took over, they could argue that the federal government was doing a great job and the Democratic governor of Louisiana was doing an awful job. But they didn't want to do it to Haley Barbour because he was a Republican and they wanted him to take the lead. Have you heard this, Sarge?
Yeah, I've heard it. And it's true. I have no doubt that it's true. Haley Barbour.
It's just very interesting to me. It's so blatantly political that, and even Mike Brown has admitted it. So it's, I was just very interested in that story. Go ahead, Sarge.
Yeah, you know, Haley Barbour. He owns a lobbying firm, GOP lobbying firm, and so he's so connected, and he's running around the country now telling everybody we're doing great down here, and that's a bunch of trash.
I would think he's one of the most corrupt governors in our nation. I mean, he's a guy who's had heavy, heavy interest in all the Republican lobbying things. He must be getting paid under the table.
He has to be, and I know he is because I can't prove it, but I know he is. You know, it's one of those things where you don't have to guess the sun's going to come up tomorrow. You know if the world's here, it's going to be.
I just don't understand in Mississippi, given Haley Barbour. I mean, I just don't understand. I thought Mississippians looked out for the little guy. And here you have this very corrupt, big money bags politician in Haley Barbour. Do they like him down there, Sarge?
No, he's not that well liked. But, you know, the one thing, and this goes back to what I was saying a while ago, is the Democrats are missing a golden opportunity. It's like I told Eric Fleming when he was running against Trent Lott. I said, Eric, if you'll get down there, work the coastal region, I guarantee you, you can put some strain on Lott. He went down there, but he stayed in the black community. And I had white people and black people both screaming at me, please tell Eric to come see us. Please tell him to come see us. If he'll come, yeah, I'll vote. And
yeah, well, I heard actually he had some connections with Lyndon LaRouche, which is one other reason why he lost so badly. Joe, I haven't let you get a word in edgewise. Go right ahead.
Well, I wanted, you know, going along with what Sarge was talking about, and what I think is important for the Democrats is if you want to win, you've got to show up. I mean, in Georgia, when I was living in Georgia, they were very upset down there that John Kerry never made an appearance in Georgia, never put any effort into Georgia, because he knew he was going to lose the state. But sometimes you go down there just to build the organization for the future, even if you know you can't win the state, you know, for the presidential election. And that's why I think what Governor Dean is doing with the 50-state strategy is so important. And I wish they'd do more of it. I really don't think they're doing enough. And I agree with Sarge. You go down there and you show people that you care, and they'll support you and they'll vote for you. And I'm certain of that. But they got to go down there and do it first.
Yeah, you're right, Joe, and that's my point. Because it's like this one woman that I know really well has told me. She said she kept telling me during the campaign, if Eric would just come see me, I would vote for him. But as it turns out, I'm not going to vote. And we had a low voter turnout. Eric still carried 35% of Jackson County, which is Lott's home county. And so if he had really put the work in, he could have carried all three coastal counties, but he just didn't do it right. And this is
I want to ask both of you the question that Dave raised, and that's the question of Hillary Clinton in Iraq. Obviously, she was not an early opponent of the war, though she does seem to be in tune now. I want to ask both of you, let's start with Joe, how much do you think that will hurt her in the primary that she was not an early opponent of the Iraq War?
I think it's going to hurt her quite a bit because there are already, you know, if you look on the Internet and you see all the different websites going back and forth, the very Daily Coast is very much anti-Hillary. If you look at their polls, their internal polls there. And if you look at someone like Bartkoff, he's extremely pro-Hillary. So she's definitely a very divisive person within the Democratic Party. So it would be very interesting to see how that would play out in the primary. Now, she's got a lot of money, but that doesn't necessarily translate into anything in actual grassroots support. So we'll see what happens on that front.
There's an interesting article in the Washington Post today from a psychologist who's done a study on political attitudes. And in his study, again, I don't know if it's necessarily the right one, but his study shows that voters don't mind a waffler. They say they do. They mind someone who switches positions. But actually, as long as the person at the end of the day comes close to their position, they don't care so much that they switch positions as that they have their position. So according to this article, at least, Democrats will fall in line behind Hillary because at least she's saying the right things now, even though she wasn't 4 years ago. Sarge, what's your view on that?
I think Hillary is the worst choice in the field. I have no desire to see her get the nomination at all because Hillary is strictly playing politics and she has a right-wing leaning agenda and I just don't trust her. And I think a lot of Americans are the same way on her. I loved her health care program when she presented it and got laughed out of Congress for it, but I just don't see her making the stand that needs to be made, and I just don't think people are going to trust her.
I don't think it's right to call her right wing. I think that's a little excessive.
She's clearly leaning.
She's clearly to the right of others in the Democratic Party. There's no question about that. But you could go a lot further right than Hillary Clinton. I mean, even the Democratic Party, you know, Joe Lieberman certainly to the right of her, and of course, just about every Republican is as well. So I don't want to overstate. It's interesting. The Republicans that talk about Hillary, they call her a liberal. They call her far left. And a lot of Democrats think of her as on the right. So in many ways, she's by playing to the middle. I think she's she's hurting herself, arguably, in both parties.
Well, yeah, but stand up for your principles, and I think a lot of people just see it like Sarge says, see it as that she's just playing politics. And of course, you have to play politics as a politician. But there's got to come a time when you got to make a stand on something, and not a stupid stand like Mr. Bush saying, "I'm going to go to war with Iraq, regardless of how stupid it is." But you got to simply sit there and say, "This is wrong, and I'm going to support or not support something based upon that."
I'm going to defend Hillary a little bit. I'm not. I certainly have not decided who to vote for. And if the primary were held today, I would not vote for her. I'd probably vote for Obama, though. If Al Gore were to run, I've always liked Al Gore. But I just want to say that I think Hillary plays politics very much like her husband, although she's not as charismatic as he, and she doesn't get away with it as much as he. But Bill Clinton, people forget, also played toward the middle. He also played to where the public was. And in that way, he managed in many ways to grab the middle and to win a large share of the American electorate. So I understand what y'all are saying. I just, it may be smart politics.
You'll never get me to vote for Obama until he changes his position on Katrina, because when I called his office two times, and both times they said, "We don't care about Katrina," that didn't win any favors with me at all.
And it shouldn't. And I have to tell you, Sarge, whoever told you that, I would think, and I don't know, but I would think if Obama knew that a staffer told you that, that staffer would be out on his or her ear.
Well, Guy James is going to talk to him this week and find out what the story is on it. So I'm just going to leave it there for the time being and see what Guy can turn up. Listen, I'm going to get offline, but before I do, I just want to mention unreportednews.net, and we got two new writers, Elo. A Horn's Own Elo has started writing for us now, and we've got a music man coming on too. I'll announce more later on him.
Terrific, Sarge. Thanks for coming here on the Inside.
Thank you, Joe and Mark. We'll see you. Bye bye.
Thank you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask I almost want to call him a co-host, but I guess he's my guest. He leads into my show, Cup of Joe, Joe Vecchio. I want to ask him what he thinks of what Congress is doing about the presidential war in Iraq. They're starting with a non-binding resolution, but it may get a lot more serious, and I want to know if he thinks that's the correct direction of Congress to go. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one?
Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the week in review. All topics are valid. There's a very interesting battle shaping up in Congress right now. Really an epic battle, the kind of which we haven't seen since Vietnam, shaping up between the president and Congress over the direction of the Iraqi war. Now, the question is, will Congress use its constitutionally nuclear weapon, if you will, to cut off funding for the troops? Now, they are reluctant, obviously, to do that, to simply cut off funding for troops in the field, which would force them to come home. And yet Congress can only work in blunt instruments. The Constitution is clear that it is Congress's role, not the president's, to appropriate funds for Iraq. And if Congress cuts off funds, he's SOL. He has no choice. The war has to end. But Congress is not allowed to make the kind of sort of fine decisions, small decisions that a commander-in-chief might make, such as where the troops go here and there. One of the things that most disturbed me recently was reading that the president was removing brigades from Afghanistan, which is really on the cusp of going back to the Taliban, back to al-Qaeda, in order to plunge them into the ongoing civil war in Iraq. Well, the Democrats have decided that they're going to fight back first with a non-binding resolution, and that's going to come up before the Senate really in the next week or two. They're already going to have hearings on it and show the president how strong the opposition is to his plan. I suspect they'll get every Democratic vote with the exception of Joe Lieberman, who's technically an independent, and I think they'll get a hefty chunk of Republican votes. I wouldn't be surprised if they got 20 Republican votes, which would give them a total of about 70 votes, pretty strong. But that reflects the will of the American people, given that only 24% of the American people currently support Bush's plan in Iraq. 24%. It's very rare that you'll ever find any presidential plan to have the support of less than one quarter of all Americans. Discussing this issue, it's Joe Vecchio, the host on the Horn, who precedes my show, The Cup of Joe. Joe, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Let me ask you this, Joe. Do you support the congressional plan as it is to start slow, if you will, start with a non-binding resolution, show the president how strong the American people are, and then move on to more binding resolutions?
Well, it's not whether you support it or not. I think that's really the only way Congress can move is very slowly. I mean, we designed the Congress and the Senate as deliberative bodies and not quick executive things. I mean, that's what the executive is there for. Unfortunately, when you have an insane executive, it makes it a little difficult. They couldn't go in, unlike what the when the Republicans took over in 94, they were going in with the express purpose of trying to impeach Clinton, which, of course, they wound up doing. But we can't really do the same thing. So we have to kind of take our time and build things up slowly, one thing at a time, one step at a time, until we get to a point where we can say we have to impeach or we have to cut the funds or whatever. So
I was just going to say, we have to remember that the Republican impeachment gambit failed.
Yes.
They got in the history books. I mean, they got to impeach Bill Clinton for what that's worth. But we have to remember that when they did that, even in the sixth year of the Clinton presidency, the voters defied the six-year itch, which normally goes against the president's party, and voted more Democrats into Congress. What I think the Democrats showed in the 70s was, before you impeach a president, you've got to get not just the majority of Democrats on board, but the majority of Republicans on board, too, as was the case with Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah, they worked very hard for that. Yeah.
And they did. They worked very hard in the 70s to prove not just to Democrats, but to independents and Republicans that Nixon should be thrown out in his ear. And, of course, impeachment shouldn't be just there for, you know, for symbolic purposes. After all, Vice President Cheney, in many ways, is more dangerous a man than our current president. Not too many people are more dangerous than George Bush, but Dick Cheney is one of them. And as the old joke goes, if Dick Cheney were to die in office, George Bush would become president, and that would be a scary thing for all of us. So I don't think impeachment is the goal. I do think the goal, though, is to stop this war in Iraq, and to do so in a way that convinces most Americans that we're doing the right thing. My view, and I want to know if you agree with me, Joe, is that the reason Bush is putting more troops in right now is not because he doesn't think the war in Iraq is lost. I think he knows, or at least should know, unless he's a complete idiot, that the war in Iraq is lost. What I think he's trying to do is he's trying to blame the Democrats for losing the war. What he wants to do is keep us in long enough, just until he leaves the presidency in 2009, and then when the next president has to take the troops out, the next president can be blamed for the failure in Iraq, and George Bush can say, well, I tried. As long as I was president, it's not my fault we lost. Do you agree with me that that's what's going on, or do you think it's something else?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that's one thing that's going on, and I really think that maybe Bush is stupid enough to think that there's such a thing as winning in Iraq, although I have no idea what he means by that, or whatever their real reasons were for invading. I mean, they could have had some completely other things. I have my own theory about, I call it oil finger, about how they were doing that, you know, intentionally making Iraq a mess to keep its oil off the market and make the value of Saudi oil and Texas oil that much, you know, greater. So I really can't say, because I don't really have insight as to what their thought process is. But, yeah, there's definitely a political angle. I agree with you with that, that they do want to try to lay the blame on the Democrats. But then again, it doesn't matter what happens, we're always going to try to blame stuff on Democrats. You know, I mean.
Well, that's true. One of the things Nancy Pelosi pointed out, and I thought it was dead on, although she got a lot of criticism in the press for it, is that Bush had 2 months or so to formulate this strategy since the election. He didn't tell the Democrats what his strategy was, but that what he did is he immediately put the troops in the field the day he announced the strategy without giving Congress time to deliberate. And he did that on purpose because he knew that once the troops were there, it would be harder for Congress to cut funding for them, harder politically for them to cut funding for them. So he did it as a crass political move rather than any need to have the troops there.
That's how the entire administration operates. Everything they do is a crass political move. They're not interested in anything else but securing their own political power and their economic power. That's really the only interest that they have, is for a very small group of people to get very, very rich at everybody else's expense. And soldiers are just pawns to them. You know, just like American workers, they're disposable. And so they'll play these politics all the time because that's all they do. That's all they know how to do. They know how to get power, but they don't know what to do with the power once they have it, except to try to get more of it.
As John DiIulio, the head of the faith-based office, said years ago, about 6 months into the Bush presidency, they are the Mayberry Machiavellis.
Mayberry Machiavellis.
It's a great expression. All they want is power. All they want is power, but they're even incompetent in that respect. They're very good at getting power, but once they do it, they don't know what to do with it. I think I've always argued that Prince George is someone who loved to run around and wear the flight suit. He was like a prince in that he loved to carry the scepter. He loved to hear the presidential music and to act like the president and to read from the teleprompters. But what to do while president? Well, he'll let Karl Rove and Dick Cheney tell him what to do.
And there's no doubt that he has a part in the policies, but I certainly agree with you that he is not the real power behind what's going on. I think that's Mr. Cheney. It was Mr. Rumsfeld until he got let go. And hell, it might still be Mr. Rumsfeld, as far as I know, and Mr. Rove. These are the power players. And if you go after Mr. Bush, you have to go after Mr. Cheney, too, because this is not a one-man operation. And realistically, I think it's just organized crime is all it is. The entire administration, I think, ought to be removed and put on trial. And the leadership of the Republican Party, as well as their financial backers. I mean, that's really how I see it. But I know that that's not going to happen anytime in the near future. So you take what
well,
you
we, it's a step-by-step process. Taking back Congress was a major step. We've come a long way. We've got a long way to go with investigations and everything else. Thank you, Joe, very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop this hour. I want to give a heads up. We got some terrific shows that are coming around the pike, and I really hope you'll join us for them. We've got tonight... If you can take a listen at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have a debate among two people that spent a lot of time in Iraq. An Iraqi veteran, John Bruins, who's come out strongly against the war, is debating another veteran who was an embedded reporter who supports the Bush policy for some reason. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be going in detail over Bush's State of the Union speech, taking it apart piece by piece. Thursday, I've got my Republican strategist Mike Lane on the air. Is it time to apologize for slavery? And what do you think about that? Then Sunday, I've got Antonia Yuhas. She's going to tell us about the Iraqi oil law. If you ever wanted to know why we're in Iraq, study the new oil law in Iraq, and that explains a lot of it. Lots of shows coming up. Tune into RadioInsideScoop.com or right here on the Head On Radio Network. This is Mark Levine. Signing off.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you give me, is my creation. Life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Guy James coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida, and around the country and around the world as well. Hello to everyone. A beautiful day here in paradise. I hope it's nice where you are as well. We're going to get a little taste of winter weather here next week when we head up to Washington, and so we're going to pack accordingly for that. That's a harsh when you haven't been in it for a while. It really is. Oh, well, we'll live through it. How are you today? Hello to everybody on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Glad to see everybody over there. Got a lively group going on there today. And hello to the folks over at Democrats.com and SmirkingChimp.com and Democratic Underground and all the haunts where all our liberal Democratic friends hang out. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. We'd like you to join in the program, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you, okay? Give us a call later on. Lots going on today. Many things to talk about. And who knows? We might get around to every one of them here pretty soon. I do want to confess something quickly right off the bat. Whenever we find out we've made a mistake on this program of any kind, I like to let you know about it. And recently I reported on the program, I think it was last week, about a press release from an environmental group saying that the National Park Service was not allowing its guides to comment on the actual age of the Grand Canyon. And I want to set the record straight. That report was bogus. It's not true. There was nothing more than a foolish attempt by this organization to get some much-needed notoriety. And that's the wrong kind of notoriety to get. So we will not be listening to that particular environmental group again. So there, we got that out of the way. Mea culpa. Yes, we are heading up to Washington next week on Tuesday. We're going to be meeting with Senator Debbie Stabenow and several other Democratic senators.